Thus, the city powers, who find it unconscionable to hike taxes on the rich, recently socked low-income bus riders with a 17% jump in fares. For the 27% of the people in Grand Rapids who live below the poverty line, that's a serious chunk of change siphoned right out of their pockets. Then, the board of directors of the city's transit agency slipped a siphon tube into the wallets of their own drivers and mechanics, arbitrarily terminating their pensions. Adding a crude insult to injury, the board simultaneously gave a pay raise to the transit boss, literally stealing from workers to lift the CEO's salary above $200,000 a year. When the workers, who were members of the Amalgamated Transit Union, began leafleting bus riders to oppose the fare hike and pension theft, the arrogant boss and autocratic board threatened to arrest and fire them. This is Jim Hightower saying, luckily, even in Grand Rapids, it's still illegal to exercise your First Amendment rights, so the union won an injunction against this repression. Better yet, the attempted siphoning of money and power has rallied community groups, students, bus riders, and others into a grassroots movement to stop widening the inequality gap and start bridging it.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Say hey, it is Monday. The time is 5:33. You're listening to Say Hey, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program right here on 90.1 KZFR. I am Jake, joined as always by Noobs. Noobs, how you doing?
I'm enjoying this change in weather.
I love today.
Today was beautiful.
Oh my God. I wish it would be like this the rest of the year.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind it being overcast, a little drizzly.
No,
took my
mind.
Dog out to the park, got him running on some wet grass.
And yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And supposed to get a little more, well, quote-unquote rain this week.
Right.
Which is fine. And then...
bring it.
Bring it this winter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bring El Nino.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I want like a, you know, all-time like Noah's Ark type thing.
Sandbag the hillside
yeah.
And just go for it. But we got all sorts of good stuff to talk about today. And, you know, we're going to lead it off. I don't know when the last time we led it off with tennis was, but we're going to do it because one of the great upsets of probably
all
professional
time.
Tennis history,
no doubt,
men's or women's, took place over the week. And that was Serena Williams going down in the semis to Roberta Vinci of Italy.
Yep.
Who was, I guess, a 30-1 to win the match, and you said a 300-1 to win the finals.
Going into the tournament. Big,
yeah.
Big, huge underdog.
I mean, that's basically like, within that match and within what Serena was trying to do, winning the slam, it's almost like Buster Douglas status or something.
It was, yeah, from a numbers perspective, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, you watched the whole match all the way through. I only caught the very end live.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me your thoughts on how it was going.
Well, I mean, Serena won the first set 6-2. You know, Vinci played a really good second set, but it was, you know, it was one of those things where you just felt like it was a typical Serena match where she just has these lulls mm-hmm. and she gets really frustrated with herself and then winds up smoking someone in the third set.
Right.
And she came out 2-0. She was up a break. She
right.
was serving for 3-love. In the third, which if she gets to 3-love, it's over. Good
right.
night.
Right.
And Vinci breaks back, and then all of a sudden that just seemed to crush Serena's spirit, which is kind of amazing that she doesn't seem to have more resolve sometimes. Considering how good she is, it's like she just never loses hardly. So
yeah.
I don't know if she's just not used to adversity or what. But
well, it's so funny, though, when an athlete is doing is on the verge of doing something incredible.
There's a lot of pressure.
Like, amazing, and then it doesn't quite work out. It's funny to hear, like, the critique of being like, well, she just, you know, she really choked. She just didn't have the resolve or whatever. And it's like, wow, the thing she had to do just to get to that point to almost win the Grand Slam.
Yeah.
And people will still be like, you know, the pressure really got to her. And it's, for me, it's just like, I don't know what to make of that, because she almost did the unthinkable and she could still catch a little flack for it.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the people have, for whatever reason, never really quite embraced her, you know, and which is kind of a shame, because she's a national treasure, really. If you think about it, she would have been, you know, the first woman since 1988, Steffi Graf, to win all four in the same calendar year. And honestly, everything opened up for her. I mean, Eugenie Bouchard got a concussion in the locker room. Some, I don't know if it was like a slip and fall on a wet tile or what happened there.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten a lot of details. But that opened it up, actually, for Vinci. Vinci was going to face Eugenie Bouchard. So she got one less match that she had to play. It almost seemed like Serena would have been better off if she was, like, facing Sharapova.
Just to be bringing the A game, sort of thing?
To bring the A game. Maybe she just overlooked Vinci. But see, to me, I don't see. I could understand if she dropped the first set that she maybe had been overlooking at her or overlooking her. But when you come out that strong in the first and then lose the second and lose the third, to me, it's like, okay, you already know what you're dealing with.
Right.
But honestly, really what it was about was, and I watched the Venus quarter, the one against her sister, the quarterfinal, and man, it was unbelievable. I mean, they were just, they were crushing the ball.
Yeah,
forehands, backhands, especially Venus's forehand, I was so impressed.
Yeah,
I mean, they were knocking the cover off the ball. And you know, the thing with Vinci is she kind of took away Serena's power by slicing.
Yeah, and then
you know
there's the credit that needs to be given to Vinci for probably having her best day ever.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Which is a rare thing in, on such a momentous occasion to have the outsider play probably her best game of tennis.
And she had to. Yeah. She had to play her the best game of her life to win that match, and she did. And she said, you know, in really, you know, in her kind of sweet, you know, unbroken or broken English, excuse me, after the match in the interview, she just basically said it was the best day of her life.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was a phenomenal moment. And, you know, I had a short turnaround to come back on Saturday and play the final.
Right, against, an all-Italian final.
You know, an all-Italian final against, you know, her fellow, you know, countrywoman.
Flavia Panetta,
who had a great final. So, yeah, I mean, you know, emotional for Vinci. You know, I don't think it was hard for her to come back a day later and get it done.
Ultimately, she's the biggest story, even with losing the final.
People are, I mean, no offense to Panetta, because she had a phenomenal tournament, but when you think of the 2015 U.S. Open, you know, you'll think of Federer and Djokovic, and on the women's side, you'll think of Serena losing in the semis. You'll think of Roberta Vinci. Yep. That'll be the household name.
Yep, yep. And Djokovic does go on to beat Federer in four sets in a great match. And, you know, Djokovic, he's... he's the guy these days.
He's the man.
He is. He's 28, which is right in that meaty range for the men's side, age-wise. Federer playing really well for the, you know, the latter stage of his career.
Oh, unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And traditionally, U.S. Open, not not quite his like, I mean, what's he got the most...
Well, he would have tied Sampras, I think.
Would he have tied Sampras for the most U.S. Opens?
I think so.
Would it have been?
He would have, this would have been his sixth or seventh.
Right.
So he won a bunch of them, but that was like the middle part of last decade.
Right.
He hadn't won one in a while.
It's been a while. Yeah.
You know, and now if you look at overall, you know, historically, now that could have been, if Federer won yesterday, he would have pushed it to 18 titles, 18 Grand Slams, and Djokovic would have been on 9 still. Now it's 17 to 10. And you kind of start to think, if Djokovic can put together another 4 or 5 years where he's, you know, winning 2 to 3 a year, you know, he could actually wind up catching Federer all time.
You never know.
You know?
Yeah, because there isn't, well, not at the moment, there's not anybody else quite in his league on the younger side.
No, he doesn't have a Nadal.
He doesn't have a Nadal that he's going up against. You know? He's got some good players.
Murray's good. Wawrinka's good.
Wawrinka's good, but not quite that level.
Not that level.
Yeah. So he could definitely clean up
for sure
more of these.
And he's been in, he's reached at least the semifinals in like 21 of the last 22 Grand Slams.
Right.
You know, so you're looking at, he's been at the top of his game for 6 years now. You know what I mean? And you said he was what, 28?
28.
So, I mean, you know, Federer's 34, playing amazing. I mean, imagine if Djokovic takes care of his body and doesn't break down, you know, through injury like Nadal unfortunately has. Mm-hmm. If Djokovic can stay healthy for 4 or 5 more years,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Talking about out. Maybe the best ever.
Yeah, look out. Right. So, big stuff in tennis. We'll move on to a little bit of Big Papi. He did something big time.
Dude.
Yeah,
my favorite of all time.
He was, you know, you knew this was going to happen anyway. It was only a matter of time, but it's still cool when it does. He got his 500th home run, and we're going to have a listen to it right here on Say Hey.
Fifth inning. Sitting on 499 home runs. Ortiz to right field. Back goes Souza. Looking up. It is gone. David Ortiz, the newest member of the 500 club. Big Papi, the greatest clutch hitter in Red Sox history, adds to his resume with number 500.
And that was in Tampa Bay, where it's always packed with Red Sox fans.
Absolutely.
Or Yankees fans, or whatever opposing team feels like.
Anybody from the AL East except for Tampa Bay.
Right, right. There's a lot of fans there, just none of them root for Tampa Bay. But it was it's a big moment, especially because he's such a fan favorite.
Absolutely.
And he has been in the game a long time. People often forget that he was a Twin for, you know, more than a couple of years.
I think it was like 6 years or something.
Struggling to make it at the big league level. Right. So he's a veteran, big time.
Oh, absolutely.
And then some. So he becomes the fourth player, I believe, of all time to have 500-plus home runs and three or more World Series rings.
Wow.
With Ruth Mantle and Reggie Jackson. That's a pretty
that's great company.
Pretty neat list to be on.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, we've talked about it before, but I think Ortiz goes into the Hall of Fame, and I really don't think it's all that close.
Yeah, I sent you kind of a stream of consciousness text the other night, and it was probably coming out of nowhere since we hadn't talked about it in a while.
Right, right.
But I just was like, I just thought, you know, I felt like he is going to get in, even though there's these, you know, there's those insinuations, if you will, that he's took performance enhancing drugs.
Right, but they're just insinuations,
right? Because it was, you know, his name got leaked from this one. These like, you know, underground tests supposedly from like back in 2003.
Yeah.
So there's no definitive proof, but I just feel like because he's such a huge fan favorite and because like it's really up to the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he doesn't have this animosity with the writers that say like Bonds did or does.
Yeah.
Manny Ramirez. Like Poppy's always been a very approachable guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just feel like with his accomplishments and what he's meant to that organization and with the three World Series, you know, I don't know if he's going to be first ballot, but if he's not first, he's getting in with the first couple of years of eligibility.
Yeah, I think so too. And I am in general, I think that guys that never play the field, you know, they deserve an extra knock when it comes to certain types of voting. But in the case of Papi, he's such a great clutch performer and such a good representative of the game in general.
Yeah,
that, you know, I don't mind in terms of the Hall of Fame thing that he doesn't play defense hardly ever.
Well, and the guy can't be faulted because the American League has that rule.
No, I know.
You know what I mean? And the thing is that when he's played, you know, during Interleague and during the World Series,
mm-hmm.
he actually was really, really good at first.
No, he can handle himself
he
at
can
first.
Totally handle
and
himself.
And if the American League didn't have a DH,
he would be the starting first baseman.
He would play first base.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're not going to bench that bat.
No, no. So that to me doesn't matter in his case. So I think he gets in. And, you know, how much longer do you think he'll play?
God, I mean, the second half of the season has been phenomenal. I mean, not to harp on fantasy too much, but I drafted him
mm-hmm.
and dropped him because he was slumping so badly. He was hitting just barely over 200.
Right.
And now I'm regretting it. You know what I mean? He's up to like 33 on the year or whatever.
Yeah.
And apparently he can still, you know, see the ball and hit the ball, which mm-hmm. is what you got to do as a DH. He's still getting doubles. He can still move a little bit around the base pass. I'm hoping they sign him to like a 2-year contract.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see him play till he's 40 now, I believe. I'd see 42.
That'd
you know?
Be cool.
Because I think this team, actually, as presently constructed, and I don't want to harp too much on my team or whatever, but you asked me a couple weeks ago like how I felt about it. And I actually, with some of the younger pitchers kind of coming around, and if Buchholz is healthy next year, and say they go out and get like a top-tier starter, you know, they could be really good. They have a great young outfield with Castillo and Jackie Bradley Jr.
They just got to figure out that pitching
stuff. Bullpen,
too.
Porcello's been better. Yeah, they got to – if Uehara, he's getting old. If he doesn't come back and pitch, then they got to get a top closer and a top number one. And they could have something like Eduardo Rodriguez pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see about Owens and some of these other guys. Porcello's been pitching better of late. So, it, you know, it's baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could finish in last – and who knows? They might actually catch the Blue Jays in the race. They could actually wind up finishing third in that division. They're playing that well right now. They're only a couple games out of third.
Out of third, yeah.
Yeah, and that's saying that much, but it's a tough division. You've got the Blue Jays who are looking like maybe the best team in the league. And
I think the Blue Jays are – I think the Yanks are starting to fade a bit
absolutely.
As the Blue Jays continue to stay hot. So I don't want to say it's over because it's only 3.5 games. Blue Jays are up on the Yankees, but I think that – Blue Jays are going to win that division.
I think so, too. We've only got 3 weeks left in the regular season.
Yeah.
And what's phenomenal to me is they're 8-2, the Blue Jays are, in Yankee Stadium this
year. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that's just, you know, that's how you win a division.
And I think Donaldson pretty much has the MVP locked up. Matt's a stone-cold lock.
The guy has just had a phenomenal year.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and for the sake of discussion, because we have this clear front runner really in the AL, the NL MVP is very much up for debate. In the classic sense of the usual MVP debate, you're listening to Say Hey, by the way, because the guy that's having the best statistical season, Bryce Harper, is on a team that's now basically 500,
right?
And a total bust, the bust in the league across baseball. The Nationals are that team again, and it gets back to that thing where, well, do you give the MVP to a guy whose team flat out didn't get it done? I mean, it might be one of those years. I think you can make a case for McCutchen again, who's also playing really well, hitting 300. He's got about 90 RBIs, pushing 30 home runs. But I don't know. What do you think about that? There's nobody else really that falls into that category unless you want to give it to Greinke or something. And I just don't see that happening.
Well, I think the big question that I think you're alluding to is basically, do you reward a guy for helping carry his team? Like, does your team have to be a good team,
mm-hmm.
a playoff team, in order for you to win MVP? Because if not, then I would say Paul Goldschmidt.
Sure.
Or even, like, believe it or not, maybe even a Nolan Arenado. I mean, Arenado uh-huh. doesn't steal bases, but he's got the lead in home runs and RBI in
yeah.
the National League.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't discount that. I don't care if he plays a Coors Field.
That's a good point, because We always debate this same thing because it happens all the time in every sport. You know, do you give it to the best player for the year, or do you give it to the guy that combined that with his team also winning? And it's easy to say that about Harper because he is having an amazing season.
Right.
But if you're gonna put Harper in that conversation of best player whose team didn't succeed, you can't forget about some of the other guys just because they don't play on a team that gets as much attention
right.
or have the, you know, pedigree hype that Harper does. Like, Arenado's numbers
are phenomenal.
Are phenomenal, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Goldschmidt has faded, even though he's still having a great
still
year.
Still hitting over 300.
He has faded a bit, but yeah.
Steals bases.
Why couldn't you consider Arenado in the same way?
Oh,
the Rockies were supposed to stink.
Yeah.
The Nationals have stunk just by chance.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's that age-old thing. Personally, I don't like it when players get the award when their teams don't succeed. I'm not a big fan of that. I'd rather see it go to McCutchen or Greinke. They're not going to give it to a pitcher 2 years in a row. It's not going to happen. But
no.
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if it goes to Harper ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, it probably will just because, like you said, the hype machine, it's been going for him, you know, since before his rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Getting Gatorade commercials and this and that. And
cover it's like, Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, and it's like he plays in Washington. You know, there is somewhat of an East Coast bias.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? People are asleep by the time Goldschmidt's even taken his first, you know, plate appearance.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I disagree that I don't think – baseball is the one sport for me where I think if you're the best player, you're the best player, and it doesn't matter how well your team does, because in baseball, you influence your team the least amount. I mean, no matter how good you are, you're only up at bat one out of every nine times,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And so it's not like basketball where, like, LeBron, if he wants, he can bring the ball up the floor. He can guard the best defender or the best offensive player on the other team, excuse mm-hmm. me. So, like, your influence level if you're like a quarterback or in basketball, whatever position you play, you can influence. There's only 10 of you out there on the floor.
Yep.
A quarterback touches the ball every single play.
Mm-hmm.
Running back gets, you know, 20 to 25 carries, maybe five catches.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, in baseball, no matter how good you are, you still are only influencing your team so much.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I would give it to Goldschmidt or Arenado, you know. I mean, they're definitely the MVPs of my fantasy season, if that means anything.
That means a lot. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's on all the writers' ballots.
Yeah, absolutely. They're like Newberry's fantasy team.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to see how it goes. The only real races that are still out there, there's two of them. There's the AL West is still very much up for grabs.
For sure.
And then the AL Wild Card in turn. And I want to say that the Twins being only one game out of Texas.
It's unbelievable.
If the Twins were to make the second wild card, I think that they would be the most unheralded playoff team in my memory. I can't think of another team that's gone to the playoffs, granted we're talking second wild card here, that's gotten less attention than the Twins have gotten all year.
Yeah.
None.
Nobody talks
Zero.
About it.
Zero.
Yeah.
Because they've even kind of floated in and out of being, you know, they've been a bit streaky.
Yeah.
And they've kind of never been at the forefront. They were never at one point like... They never had some big lead and then blew it. They've always just kind of been around the same.
Right.
That would be really a kind of a trip if they snuck into the second wild card.
It would be a trip. And if it's any indication, and granted this is like always for entertainment purposes only, but I rechecked the odds mm-hmm. to win the World Series. And they've got Texas is now down to 22,
mm-hmm.
right? And Minnesota is 65-1.
Right.
Right. So, and they're only a game out of Texas, behind Texas, for that second wild card.
So
that's kind of an indication that Vegas does not even believe that they're even going to make the playoffs.
Right.
But so it's like, to me, I look at those teams and I don't see a huge discrepancy.
It's only a game.
It's only a game. This late, we got 3 weeks to go.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Minnesota's got some good players, some good young players, too. Sano and Buxton.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know if their pitching matches up with Texas as well.
Mm-hmm.
One thing to mention about the Rangers real quick, looking at the schedule, they've got something like 14 home games left mm-hmm. and only like six on the road. And they're starting a four-game home series with those Astros tonight.
Right. That's a big
So that's a huge series.
Yeah.
And then they've got a three-game series in Houston towards the end of the season. So they've still got seven left.
Right.
Pirates and Cubbies play seven more times.
Yep. And that's really, they're just fighting each other for who gets home field in the wild card.
You'd think that, but Pittsburgh snuck up to like 2.5 behind St. Louis or something.
Is it that close right
now? Yeah, because St. Louis had a nightmare series against Cincinnati.
Right.
They had the one game suspended, and so they went lost two on Saturday.
Right.
I believe they won yesterday, but it's like 2.5 or three games.
Wow. Because I know that they almost got swept by the Cubs just about a week ago.
No, they've been slumping.
Yeah, they have been slumping. They're beat up, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of all offensively, they're beat. And then, we've got about 7 minutes left here. College football,
yep,
going off, and the big game this week was Oregon going down to Michigan State, 31-28.
Yep, big heavyweight matchup.
Yep. And I want to say before I let you roll, Oregon to me, it looks a little bit different than the Oregon we've gotten used to over the last several years.
Yeah,
in terms of this crazy high speed explosive offense.
Yep.
That might not be in the cards for them right now.
I think that they're gonna get better. Their quarterback is a transfer from Eastern Washington, I mm-hmm. believe, and it's gonna take, like, he's really only even been on campus, they said, for like a month.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like, it's not like Mariota where, you know, he was the starter for like 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so there's gonna be a learning curve there. But they hung with Michigan State, who I believe is, I mean, obviously they're ranked number five, so it's not like I'm Kreskin over here, but I really feel that they're a strong team.
Mm-hmm.
Great quarterback, Connor Cook. Great team that's played really well in the Big Ten over the last couple of years. Gave Ohio State kind of a run for their money. Actually, I believe they beat them in the Big Ten Championship 2 years ago. And so looking a little down the line, that Michigan State-Ohio State game in November is going to be huge.
Yeah. Yeah, Ohio State's still obviously on top of the rankings.
Right.
And then Bama, I think, is still number two.
Yep.
TCU is still at three.
Yeah.
Although they played Stephen F. Austin.
Right.
I mean, that's basically, you show up and you get a win.
Yeah, for sure.
70-7.
They rolled their helmets out there and got 70 points.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. But any matchups you're looking forward to in the coming week?
I'm looking forward to Alabama-Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a revenge game from last year. Crimson Tide went in last year. They went to Ole Miss and lost the game. Didn't really wind up hurting them too bad because they still made the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as early SEC, you know, positioning, if you will, in the West, this could be a good matchup.
Yep.
You know, Ole Miss looks pretty good. The SEC has 10 teams in the top 25, man. But Arkansas is going to drop out after losing to Toledo. Couple of Tennessee lost to Oklahoma in a really, really exciting game Saturday night. I don't know if you caught any of that overtime comeback.
I did not actually, was not able to catch that one.
It was a good one.
Pac-12's got two teams in the top 10 right now, UCLA and USC.
Yeah, I think UCLA is the real deal. They handled Virginia at home, and then Virginia almost upset Notre Dame.
Right.
Notre Dame's quarterback goes out for the year. Don't know how much of a step they're going to lose because the backup came in and threw two touchdowns, including the game-winning one with about 30 seconds to go.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful pass.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting. I to me, Notre Dame, it's like I never really get too excited because they're kind of able to skirt through and, like, you know, they play some tough teams. They're going to play USC and Stanford. But because they don't play a conference schedule, you know what I mean? They don't ever have to run the gauntlet. Because with a conference schedule, it's like you're not really sure who's going to be good every year.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to play everybody in your division plus a few more in the other division.
Right.
You know, because pretty much all the major conferences have been now split into two. But you've got to face who you got to face, and you got to run through them every year. Where, you know, Notre Dame's able to schedule Army and Navy or BYU. Not that BYU's having an exciting season so far.
Yeah, they're off to a good start.
Two Hail Mary wins.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so Notre Dame, I'm not going to get too excited.
No, and they've been a bit of a paper tiger even recently.
Oh, for sure.
These recent seasons where there'll be a lot of clamor about them climbing up the rankings, and then it'll come time to you know, show me time of the season.
Right.
It peters out.
I mean, it's like that year that they were able to kind of, you know, dodge a bunch of landmines, and they went 12-0 into the BCS championship and got smoked by Alabama.
Right.
I mean, they looked like they had no business being on the field.
Right. The last time Notre Dame was probably, like, really, really good. What was that year they played one of my favorite games ever?
The Miami? It was like 1988 or something?
Well, I was also thinking the year that the Trojan machine got them in that tough game in Notre Dame. With Leinart and Bush.
Yeah, that was an exciting game.
Yeah, that was a pretty good Notre Dame team.
Because they legitimately could have, like, derailed USC's season.
Yeah.
USC was going for, like, two or three straight national championships.
Right. Yeah, that's one of my favorite college games ever. Yeah,
that was a good one.
And then, real quick, the last 3 minutes, the NBA has officially adopted the playoff seeding as it makes sense, which is cool because we had talked about that during the season and how wacky it was to have, you know, the Trailblazers above, who was it?
The Spurs, I think.
Yeah, and then that's why the Spurs had to play the Clippers
in round one.
So that won't be an issue next year.
Good.
Which is good.
They just need to get rid of the conferences or the divisions and just have it like, just, you know, the Eastern and the Western Conference.
Uh-huh.
And rank them 1 through 15.
Yeah.
And just have that be the standings. Forget the East. Because it's not like in baseball where it's a lopsided schedule with your divisions.
That's true.
In basketball, they pretty much play everybody in their conference four times.
Right.
Except for a couple that they play three.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then they play everybody in the other conference in a home and away.
Right.
So, I mean, basically, it's an even schedule anyway.
Yeah.
So let's just get rid of the divisions.
Yeah. That's one thing to consider.
You know,
it may not happen, but at least this is a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The one thing I would not like to see, though, is I don't want to see them go 1 through 16, like, for both conferences.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't want to see, because people were throwing that idea out there, because the West has been so much stronger.
Yeah.
Yep. You know what I mean? But I don't like that idea. I like to see, because I don't want to see two Eastern or two Western teams wind up facing each other in the finals.
Right.
I still want that East-West dynamic.
Right. Yeah, you know? Yeah. I like that too. Even as bad as the East is, ultimately I do
but
like that.
But by the time they weed it down, they're going to throw a heavy hitter out there, whether it's whoever LeBron James is playing for the next 5 years is going to win the East.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real.
Right. You could pretty much count on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the time being. And that's just about going to do it. Get rid of some underwriting here on Say Hey, which of course is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Chico's newest restaurant, Buffalo Wild Wings, which features 36 beers on tap, wall-to-wall HD TVs with nonstop sports, wings, and more at 801 East Avenue. Open every day, 11 a.m. till midnight. More information at buffalowildwings.com. Then we got Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, producers of locally crafted ales and beer since 1981. Sierra Nevada also offers fine dining at their tap room and restaurant at 1075 East 20th Street in Chico. More info at SierraNevada.com. And then the forthcoming hour, we're going to have LaShow coming up after Peace Talks Radio, and that is made possible by MCM Vintage and Max Wax Museum Records, a new antique mall featuring collectibles, vintage antiques, and the best in mid-century modern furnishings and decor. Wax Museum Records offers collectible vinyl, CDs, and music memorabilia at 260 East 1st Avenue, right in downtown Chico. So, Noobs, thank you, as per usual. And going to get into a little Peace Talks here. So stick around. We got much more on the way. We'll see you next week, Noobs.
All right, brother.